This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Making stuff is hard, especially in the entertainment world, where big egos, bigger budgets, and just plain bad luck can make things go horribly wrong. And we're going behind the scenes of these disastrous, never-ending, and often dangerous productions to find out why it was a shit show.
Hello, friends. My name's Ian. I'm joined by Clint.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hello.
And this was It Was a Shit Show. Today, my two co-hosts' homework were two films. Theodore Rex from 1996, a buddy cop film starring Whoopi Goldberg and an anthropomorphic dinosaur.
And a dinosaur. fucking dinosaur.
I know, right?
Which we'll get to on the next episode. But, and then the other one I gave them was The Cat in the Hat in 2003, the Dr. Seuss adaptation with Mike Myers. Clint, what did you think the two movies had in common? What did you think at the time?
Well, I was just like, oh, it's a they're both movies that have big production design, main characters that are not human, and so there's a lot of like puppeteering and like props and mm-hmm. costumes and
special effects and special effects
and
makeup. Yeah, that's
yeah,
kind of
so
like
I thought it was something to do with that.
I just thought, I mean, again, we say it all the time, we're not a movie review show. But I just thought maybe the thing that connected the two of them, they were both garbage.
They're both just
the worst movies ever.
Here's the thing, though, is
the
that
one like that I had to watch high, like seriously.
Well, Ian told me he's like, hey, do you want to watch two shitty movies or one shitty movie and one good movie? And I was like, well, I don't care. I don't mind watching shitty movies. Like whatever is going to be more fun to talk about, let's watch that one. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, like neither of these I considered to be shitty movies. Like, I had a blast, an absolute fucking blast. I mean, yes, like, obviously, objectively, they're not good movies.
They're not good.
I had so much goddamn fun watching these, though, both of them.
I remember thinking to myself, and I texted the two of you while watching Theodore Rex, and we'll get into this, but I was just like, what is going on? But, like, The Cat in the Hat, like, they're I know it's not good, but I'm watching it, and I'm like, something about this just like is good, and I can't.
Yeah, there's
put
a
my
level of competency that was kind of like, oh, wasn't expecting that.
It was unexpected,
and I think a lot of it for me had to do with
it was Mike Myers.
It was Mike Myers,
100%. Yeah,
yeah. We'll go down. We'll jump into that movie a little bit here, but so I also said as a palate cleanser after watching those two movies, if you wanted, because I went into it thinking that they were just gonna be fucking awful and just. You were just watching it passively.
Yeah.
But I also said to watch the Italian Job remake, also from 2003, because it relates. And so How does that throw your...
I don't know, because like, I finished The Cat in the Hat last night, so I didn't have a chance to watch The Italian Job. Mm-hmm. But I've seen it before, right? And so I'm thinking, I don't know, like, does Mark Wahlberg have a cameo in The Cat in the Hat that I don't know about? Like,
yeah, I wouldn't know how to square.
Marky Mark was in Theodore Rex.
Yeah.
Unless it was capers, like all the movies have capers, shenanigans.
Maybe. I was just saying, like, they all have problems to solve. I'm like, isn't that every movie?
Yeah,
Well, so after finishing the MCU videos, the story of Natalie Portman's reluctant involvement in Thor 2, The Dark World, reminded me of a topic I've had on a post-it note since we've started this whole journey. Final guesses?
I can't say. I already know what it is.
Yeah, I didn't even found out.
Contract obligations.
Ooh, contractual almost obligations. Exactly. Contractually obligated casting.
Oh, hey, all right. As soon as you said Natalie Portman with Thor and with The Dark World, I'm like, okay, she's probably contractually obligated to do that. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well done.
I'm contractually obligated to be here. Yeah, right, exactly. Now, so right? I understand.
Meaning movies where actors were forced to star in a movie against their will.
Makes you think like the entire
Empires of the Deep.
Everybody was
production.
Well, now that just makes me wonder like what actors they were for these movies. I mean, I could probably guess for Theodore Rex.
But well, we'll jump into it. Let's talk contractually obligated casting.
You were offered the role of Black Widow,
mm-hmm.
but you had to turn it down because you're so fucking busy. That you were doing Gulliver's Travels at that point.
No. I actually do want to clean up the story on Gulliver's Travels. I was contracted to do Gulliver's Travels. I didn't want to do Gulliver's Travels. It was a bit of a heartbreaker for me because I take such pride in the decisions that I make. And they mean so much to me, the films that I do. So that was tough. But it irked my heart for it to have happened in the first place. But I ended up trying to, I will always try and make the best of any situation for sure.
Clint, do you have anything for Clint's Closet?
I have something for Theodore Rex. We'll get to that later. And for The Cat in the Hat, and I didn't bring it because it's tucked, again, it's in all my storage of stuff, but I have a Wayne's World hat.
Wait, didn't you bring that once already for something else?
My Wayne's World hat?
Yeah,
maybe. I don't think so.
I probably talked about it because Lisa and I for Halloween were Wayne and Garth. So
yeah.
So it's really Lisa's. Okay. It's really Lisa's Wayne's World hat.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean that's.
Was Lisa Garth?
I was Garth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Lisa was Wayne. I was Garth. Yeah. Nice. But so I don't have it here, but I do have it.
Do you have one?
And
okay.
I tried
all
to.
Right. Yeah, all right. All right.
I searched up and down for it. It has to be stored away in our Halloween costume stuff.
We'll just have to accept your regular hat as a replacement.
We'll just get a Sharpie and just Wayne's World on top of this.
Okay, before we jump into these, I want to clarify. These are actors and movies long after the studio system of old. Back in the 30s and whatnot, when you worked for a studio entirely.
Like
all the movies you were doing was just for that studio.
Well, we talked about this with The Conqueror a little bit. Like John Wayne was supposed to do like a certain number of movies and that's why he ended up doing The Conqueror.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you just worked for that company and you, same with the directors and the writers. You just worked for one company. You didn't get to go around. You weren't a free agent. So today with some of the actors we'll be discussing, what happens is the studio, kind of like a remnant of that, the studio system, they will take a risk on an unknown, untested actor for a big role in a modestly budgeted movie. So they're like, this is a very important role in this movie. We need somebody who can really knock it out of the park. But this person, they've shown that they've been good in other things, but they haven't really had their breakout success yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the studio will sign them with a contract saying, if you do this movie, you have to do one or two more movies with us. And then in the future, and each one you will make more than the previous.
Okay.
And so for an upcoming actor, it's like a life-changing opportunity. Like it's kind of employment for a little while and it's just increased amounts of money. And for the studio, if it's a breakout role for that actor, their next movie could be with them and people are like, oh, I like that person. I'm going to go see that because that person's in it, right?
Right.
And so in theory, the studio can make a lot of money.
Right, which is probably why a lot of animated features, will have like big name actors, not necessarily because they're contracted, but because people are like, oh, so-and-so's in that. I'm going to go see it, even though the movie's probably.
I mean, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's an old way of thinking of it's. I mean, we've talked about this when we were talking about Ratatouille. It was just like kids don't give a shit when it comes to animated movies.
Yeah.
But I think in general nowadays, like in the MCU video, I talked about like Anthony Mackie saying that like he's not a star. The Falcon is the star now.
Yeah.
Like right. People don't go to movies for actors anymore. So it's kind of like an outdated concept. Mm. But
yeah.
So like in the case of like, actually speaking of that, like big franchise films, it's not uncommon for studios to sign like actors to 3 or even way more movies in this series.
Yeah, didn't Sam Jackson like
his was
like
nine? His was for 9 movies to be in the MCU. And then they wanted Chris Evans to do 9. And he was like, fuck no. Like, and so it was took them a long time to get to him to agree to 6 films because he's like, okay, if it's great, he's like, it just changes your life and you're going to be stuck with this thing for a while. But if it's terrible, you're also stuck.
Yeah, then right? You're just fucking like, showing up and phoning it in. And
yeah, and you end up in Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. Like, and you have to do it.
Yeah.
So in that vein, some real quick ones like that. Ryan Reynolds in X-Men Origins Wolverine. So he was set to play Deadpool for a solo movie, but Fox decided to throw him into X-Men Origins and said if he didn't do it, they'd recast him for Origins and the solo film. So he was contractually obligated to do that movie.
Gotcha. Mm.
Jennifer Garner in Elektra. A movie that I don't think so. It's like same thing in reverse.
Oh, because it was the Daredevil.
She was in Daredevil.
Yeah.
So she was required to star in the spinoff, even though she didn't want to do it.
That's so funny. I never saw that one.
I don't think I know anybody that's seen it, but Jenny Ray in her room.
Oh, I did. Yeah. This is a Ray's. What do we call my thing? Ray's
rack.
I had a pair of size. That were SAI size, that were like Elektra themed, that were like on this like cool plaque, and I had them on my wall. They were so badass.
Yeah, I remember those being on there. But you've never seen the movie, have you?
No, but but I've seen Daredevil.
Because like the plaque had Elektra on it. Like it was like branded for
Elektra.
For the Elektra movie, not
that's
Daredevil.
Funny.
Right, but to my like.
And it wasn't Raphael's size either.
Right, but to my 13-year-old.
Another well-known pair of size is Elektra's.
To my 13-year-old self, though, it wasn't branded for the movie. It was branded for the character who, like, was cool in the Daredevil
movie. Do you still have them?
No. When I became an adult, Clint, I got rid of most of my collectibles.
Is that why you're so sad?
No veiled threat at you at all.
Yeah, that's why my life is really cold and empty.
Yeah.
No, I had like a shit ton of action figures. I had like posters, all kinds of random stuff that I just ended up getting rid of because I was like, this doesn't feel like a thing an adult should have. And now I'm like,
that makes me really sad.
Oh man, really wish I would have kept. I only kept a Legolas action figure that's upstairs in
that's still there. Yeah,
movie
we still
stuff,
have that.
Yeah.
There you go. Gotta, you know, it's never too late to start again,
right? Well, I think that's what Lego is, right? For adults now, is that's filling that void.
No, it's super.
My void must be really big because I'm doing Lego and everything else. I'm considering buying a brand new 3D printer so I could print my own stuff. This is how I'd use my brother's. Like, it's, yeah.
Sorry, okay. Continue. Hey, guys.
Hey, we're doing a podcast.
Casting stuff. Brad Pitt in Troy. Pitt pulled out of a different movie for Warner Brothers, and they forced him to be in Troy, which he did not enjoy doing because he felt his performance was more about his looks than anything else.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he looks so good in that movie.
Well, I mean, like, that's the character. Paris is just, like, a pretty boy, right? Everyone else did all the fighting. He was Paris, right?
Achilles.
No, he was Achilles.
Oh, shit. Never mind. Just
that was Orlando Bloom, your favorite.
He's also a pretty boy.
That's why the only thing that she has left is that Legolas.
That's true. Yeah, you're exactly correct.
That's 100% true.
Where's your Achilles statue?
No, I think Brad Pitt is kind of like he's the same boat as Chris Pine in that they were cursed to be way too good looking for people who wanted to be like character actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they both like transitioned okay because Chris Pine's like done all kinds of weird shit.
Yeah. He's always doing weird, fun stuff.
And like Brad Pitt is great in Bullet Train. That's a super fun, like,
he's great in lots of things, right? Yeah, yeah. But it's just one of those things where you're like, oh, you're a heartthrob. You need to be these types of characters, right?
Yeah. Ugh, must be really hard.
I know, right?
To be that good looking.
It is, Ray. Thank you for...
Did you just look at me? Yeah. But, okay, going back to Marvel here, this one I found very interesting. Emily Blunt in Gulliver's Travels from 2010. That was with Jack Black.
Right.
I don't know if anybody else who's actually seen this movie.
Nope.
Blunt was originally cast as Black Widow for Iron Man 2. Which I think is perfect casting.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of Emily Blunt as Black Widow. And I remember hearing that going, exactly from the person from the comics. Like, that's so perfect. However, for starring in her breakout role for
Devil Wears Prada,
Blunt had a contract with 20th Century Fox that she would do another film for them. After Fox finds out that she was going to play Black Widow, they tell her she needs to drop it and be in Gulliver's Travels. But if not that film, they will make her star in the next picture they wanted for her.
Oh.
And Blunt didn't want to hold that over her head forever, right? So she decided to
holding her hostage, basically.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Like knowing in the back of her mind that no matter what, she's going to have to do something for Fox.
Yeah, exactly. And it could be total shitty.
Yeah.
Like Gulliver's Travels.
So she's like, let's just get it over with.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. And so she decided to get it over with as soon as possible. And she called that like heartbreaking that she had to give that up.
Oh.
And I, to this day, I still think Scarlett Johansson was a bad casting for Black Widow. Even though that she's, as much as she is in the culture as Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson, love her, think she's a fantastic actress, but she has that like girl next door kind of look, and Emily Blunt has a super assassin look.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, and
that's why they were the characters, she and Anne Hathaway were the characters they were in Devil Wears Prada, because Anne Hathaway is girl next door, and Emily Blunt is like, super polished badass.
Yeah, you take her Devil Wears Prada and make her a spy.
Yeah.
Like, that's Black Widow. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so good. Mm-hmm. And so I've always just felt like that was kind of miscasting.
Yeah. But I think she's doing okay for herself, though. She's Mary Poppins.
No. Jungle Cruise.
Were those also contractually obligated? Emily, are you okay? Blink twice if you need us to save you from whatever fucking Fox contracts you've gotten yourself into.
Well, now it's Disney. Now Disney, like, if you want to be Mary Poppins, you got to be in the Jungle Cruise with The Rock.
She's like, fuck. Why do I keep doing this to myself?
I wanted that movie to be so much better than it was. I mean, such a fun ride. It's so goofy and stupid. I love that ride so much. And then they're like, let's sprinkle in some Pirates of the Caribbean supernatural elements into it. Everyone's gonna love it. No, we don't love it.
But you paid to see it anyway.
I did, yeah.
And that's all they care about.
That's
right. It's all just in service of filling the void.
Yeah, the void is so big.
But are we right about that, though? Was that also a contractual thing?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm assuming like some of that stuff is. I mean, you get in a lot of those times, like, it's getting into the good graces of a studio, right? Mm-hmm. So you can get bigger, higher paying roles with the studio. So
being an actor sounds exhausting.
It sounds really hard.
Okay. So those quick ones. Now to the more juicy stuff. Okay. Edward Norton in The Italian Job. Norton's breakout film was Primal Fear, made by Paramount, who signed him to appear in two more films for the studio. And for the second one, he would get $75,000. And then the third movie, you get $125,000. So that's kind of like, again, for an actor, that's kind of life-changing. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, but when you're first starting out, that's a big deal.
Exactly, yeah. Right? So, but Norton, like, after he did that movie, like, skyrockets, right? And as time goes on, like, he's just becoming this really big, known actor. And he's about to sign on to do Fight Club. And Paramount's annoyed that he was making all these other movies, these like prestigious films, without making it with Paramount. But Paramount's really annoyed that that he hasn't fulfilled his contract. Mm-hmm. So Paramount tells Fox, who's making Fight Club, remember this is 99, they'll sue them if Norton signs on to do the movie. And Fox doesn't want to deal with this. They're like, God. Says we won't cast him just to avoid a lawsuit. Like, this is not that important. Hmm. And Norton, on the other hand, wants that role like so much.
Yeah, that's like the movie he is the most known for.
Yeah,
by far.
Yeah. And so he works out a deal with Paramount. And I swear to God, he has really good negotiators. His agents are really good at this because he negotiates that he only has to do one more movie with them. And he gets to do it for $1 million. But after...
Yeah, what?
Yeah, like how do you negotiate that?
How do you swing that? Damn.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So, he probably just annoyed them to death.
Yeah.
It's like, is he some kind of like Svengali? He's got like hypno eyes.
So instead of paying me $125,000, you could pay me $1 million.
To do two more movies. How about? And they're like, great plan.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
Let's do it.
So but after Fight Club finishes, they have 18 months to find a new project together. Otherwise, Paramount would have an additional 2 years to find something of their own choosing. They would just like force him to be in something.
Okay.
This goes on for years. Norton wants the talented Mr. Ripley, but they've already cast Matt Damon.
Mm.
So they're like, no. He wanted to play the villain for Mission Impossible 3. When that was going to be made by David Fincher, that all falls apart. So that doesn't happen. He's going to produce and star in Spike Lee's 25th Hour. Paramount could also produce it, you know, and that could count, right?
Yeah.
They say no. Hmm. He makes The Score in 2001. That's with Robert De Niro and Marlon Brando. Another heist movie,
mm-hmm.
Which is made by Mandalay Pictures, which Paramount distributes their films. Does that count? No.
No.
Paramount says no.
So he's telling him all these movies, like, hey, I'll do this. And Paramount's like, no. But all the while, he still did Fight Club for Fox?
Yes.
Okay, because that was 2001.
The contract, because they already renegotiated it to be like...
And he's doing all these other... Like, Paramount, what are you doing? Like, what is
this? It's already 2001. Fight Club's been out for 2 years. It's a major hit.
They could have easily attached themselves to any of those movies to fulfill this contract and then been, like, done with it.
Yeah, but it's just like they wanted him because, like, he'll bring in something big for them. But who the fuck knows? But this is my favorite part. They want him to be in The Core.
Okay. Yeah. Drill into the Center of the Earth
the
movie.
The Drill into the Center of the Earth movie.
I don't know this one.
With Aaron Eckhart and Hilary Swank.
No, I don't know this.
Fuck awful.
They got a drill to the center of the Earth for, I don't remember.
To restart the Earth.
Oh, this gravitational spin.
Yeah, the Earth started.
It's a Futurama episode. There's a whole episode of Futurama about it.
The Earth stops spinning, and so they have to go underneath and light up a
like
bunch
nuke
of nukes.
The core to like so to kick
just start,
start
it again.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, it's terrible. But I just find it really funny. They're like, how about The Core? And he's like, no. So Paramount finally reaches the end of their rope and says, the Italian job, or we'll sue you.
Okay.
After a lot of arguments, Norton finally said, fine. But at this point, Norton was making $10 million per film. So
was he able to negotiate that too?
No, he took a $9 million pay cut.
So that's basically what they got, is that there had been years of him building up his career and his name.
His prestige.
And then they were
See, it's good.
And then they were able to get him in a movie for like way cheaper than
they
would have.
Because that's what they originally negotiated, right?
Yeah.
That was the original negotiation.
Well, I mean, the original was,
I'll do the movie for you.
For $75,000. Yeah. And now it's up to $1 million. But at least it's not $10 million.
Okay, yeah. I guess I see the strategy on their side. At first, I was like, this is a dumb plan. But I'm like, all right.
So I always remember that because I haven't seen it in a long time, but I love the Italian Job remake.
Yeah, I remember. That's a good one.
Controversial choice. It's better than the original.
Ooh.
But one of the things I always thought was like, think Norton's really good in that movie. He's a good bad guy.
I remember him being a good bad guy, yeah.
Yeah. So I've always wondered, like, if he was, like, a piece of shit. Because Norton is known for being very, very controlling in the projects that he's in.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if, like, he just hated doing it. But according to Seth Green, Norton was very cool on set.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So David Cross in the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies.
Oh, right.
Have you seen these as a father?
No, because luckily I'm still able to like really kind of control that a little bit. Like, you guys want to watch a good movie? Let's watch some like classic Disney.
Yeah.
No, my kids haven't been interested in Alvin and the Chipmunks, although I think my brother did work on one of them. But we haven't seen it. I haven't seen any of them.
So, I don't think I've seen these either.
Being a franchise, Cross signed on for a minimum of 3 films as the villain. Now, if you know anything about David Cross, he's very open and very vocal about the stuff that he does, and he doesn't mince words. And he was always very open about how he signed on to do this movie, because a bunch of his fans were like, why'd you sell out to do this? And he was just like, I did it for the money. Like, and he was like, I wanted this. There was this cabin near like a lake in the woods. And he was like, I just really wanted that cabin. And so guess what? This movie allowed me to get that.
That's your cabin money.
So
I love it when people like, send out the argument, like, oh, what a sellout. He used to be cool, but he's a sellout. I was like, you would do the same.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. For the amount of money that they're giving you. Yeah. Yes.
I 100% would. That makes me a sellout, fine. But I would do that too.
If you offer me enough money, I have zero integrity. Integrity just gone.
They just drove a dump truck full of money up to my house.
I'm not made of stone. But on the third film, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked.
Like Shipwrecked, but
yes,
with Chip.
Chipwrecked.
Because they're on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Oh.
I see. While the directors and actors were nice, he said the whole thing was awful. Clint, you will be our David Cross.
Okay. This last film was literally, without question, the most unpleasant experience I've ever had in my professional life.
He said this before the movie came out.
That's amazing.
But speaking of digital creatures, we've kind of touched on this one once. Bill Murray in the Garfield movie. Mm-hmm. Garfield, the movie, 2004. Murray was offered the role and he saw Joel Cohen on the script and barely skimmed it. He was thinking, oh, the Coen brothers, they know what they're doing. It'll be great.
No, it's the bad Coen.
Yeah, well, it was Coen with an H, not Coen, C-O-E-N.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize that mistake until it was too late.
I just like, what's going on in Bill Murray's head, though, that he thinks that the Coen brothers would make a Garfield movie?
Right?
Like, you've seen their films, right?
Yeah, they've never made a single IP.
They've never made a single not original movie ever in their whole careers. Like, why would they suddenly be like, you know what? Garfield. That's what we're doing.
Yeah,
we're doing fucking this. Garfield.
Next, it's not like they need the money.
Next, Marmaduke.
They just, they just really hate Mondays.
That's how they got the meeting with Murray.
Yeah.
They just offered him some lasagna.
Come have a lasagna lunch. We'll talk about how much we hate Mondays.
And while you're here, here's a microphone. Okay, if you could say these lines here.
Yeah.
He found the movie very difficult because he couldn't improv that much because Garfield was already shot. Like, they already filmed the movie.
Right.
And then they had, like, rough animations. And so you can't have him just go off on a long tirade because that's not what they already have.
Right.
And so so he was just trying to, like, they had to put him in a box. Mm-hmm. And he hated doing that.
Yeah, you can't
and
put Bill
we,
in a
can
box.
Can we safely assume and just maybe even just say that Bill Murray is not an actor but an improviser?
Yeah, like, just, yeah, that's good. Like, he's not exactly so deep into a role where you're like, oh, what's this character? You're like, that's Bill Murray.
Yeah.
He's a personality.
Yeah. He said he kept swearing and the producers would just keep getting mad at him.
Oh, I fucking hate Mondays.
Fucking like, Mondays.
Press the little thing to go into the sound booth. Bill, we're going to need you to do that line again. This time, just Mondays. We don't need to mention the fucking part.
Give me that goddamn lasagna.
But as you remember, he's done voice acting before and has loved it because he kind of does what he wants.
Do whatever he wants, yeah.
Ray, will you be our Bill Murray about his experience on Garfield?
It was sort of like Fantastic Mr. Fox without the joy or the fun. Oh, maybe that's what, maybe he's like, yeah, I did Fantastic Mr. Fox with Wes Anderson, which is like a well-known like kids book. Mm-hmm. And like, that was super amazing and like very auteurish and creative. And so maybe like the Coen brothers are doing this like cool fucking spin on Garfield. They're taking like a beloved character and they're going to make it like really original. And it's like, no, dude, it's a straight ahead Garfield film. Yeah. Sorry.
Maybe they'll make Garfield like really depressed and like he like just drinks himself to, you know, into a stupor. Like
he's trying to kill John.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
cats.
Yeah,
you know, like
exactly.
Cats,
cats are always plotting your death.
Like, nah, it's just this weird, wacky thing.
Well, that's a good transition to what? Obviously.
Animation.
The Cat in the Hat.
Cats. Oh. Cat in the Hat with Mike
Did you forget
Myers.
About that, Clint?
Oh, my God. I'm going to have nightmares of Thing 1 and Thing 2.
They're horrifying.
They are very terrifying.
Absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. So let's start from the beginning on this one. Okay. So Audrey Geisel, who is the widow of Theodore Geisel, a.k.a.
Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss, gave producer Brian Grazer the rights to only adapt How the Grinch Stole Christmas. That's it. See how this goes.
Mm.
After the huge success of the Jim Carrey-led film.
I see the strategy behind that. But why let them do the most popular and well-known Dr. Seuss book? Why not the Star-Bellied Sneetches or the Lorax first? You know, like, hey, see what you could do with this like lesser-known one, and then we'll give you the Grinch.
Because in the studio's point of view, it was like,
why would they do that?
Yeah,
they want to do the popular one.
Yeah, get the one that
everybody knows. I get that. Maybe I'm thinking like from like the standpoint of like of the estate of Theodore.
Yeah, she's like, oh, no, but you can have this.
Yeah.
Good luck with Hop on Pop.
Here, do the one where there's actual nudity in this one. Like, see what you can do with that one.
Good luck with One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish.
She just totally swindles him. And widely, like, that movie was a huge hit. It was, like, biggest movie of that year in 2000. So Geisel, she's like, okay, Grazer, you can have the rights to the next big Dr. Seuss book, The Cat in the Hat. But again, just this one.
So, but there was this is not the first time that like Dr. Seuss movies have been made, because when we were kids, all of those were like animated films.
Yeah.
Like I remember watching all of those as like the original kind of animated versions. And so
This is like live action stuff. Right,
right, right. Okay.
Just the, I should clarify, just live action.
Right.
So the original idea for the film, okay, this is late 90s, which actor would you see in that role who really wanted to make this?
I mean, is it not Mike Myers?
No.
Jim Carrey would have made sense, but he'd already done the Grinch.
He already did the Grinch, right.
Late 90s. Give me a hint. Give me a hint.
TV. Around this time, he voiced a certain toy twice.
Tom Hanks?
Or Woody, close.
Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Tim Allen. Of all the people.
What?
Okay, so.
That would have been fucking terrible.
So he... What, he's the one that started this project.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And he had an idea of how he wanted to do it. When he was a kid, was scared of the cat in the book.
I understand. Yeah.
This is Tim Allen. Clint, you're going to be Tim Allen.
Okay. On
his idea of how to do Cat in the Hat movie.
My dream is to give it the edge that scared me. Like Alien, we'll see very little of the cat. He's a human being who turns into the cat, like a werewolf or vampire. As he gets more and more frustrated trying to deal with these children.
Oh my God, I changed my mind. I want to see this movie.
Oh my God.
This is the best version of this movie. A monster in the house film with fucking...
with a cat in a hat.
When is the cat in the hat going to be...
imagine throwing the things in there.
Oh yeah.
Like his, and they're like doing like the backwards spider crawl yeah, like on the like ceiling Reagan, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, creepy.
And they're gibberish speak.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. When is this in public domain? Let's get it. Let's do it.
Probably soon.
Yeah, probably.
Right. We're on it. We're on top of it.
Yeah.
So when that was Tim Allen's project, it was written by Eric Roth. Now, Eric Roth has written dozens of things and nominated for multiple stuff, from Forrest Gump to most recently Killers of the Flower Moon. So he originally wrote the script, but that was tossed.
Hmm.
Then Universal hires three Seinfeld writers. Alec Berg, David Mendel, and Jeff Schaefer.
Alec Berg is great.
Yeah, and Alec Berg has done a lot of other things like Silicon Valley and stuff like that.
I just imagine Mike Myers is the cat with the bass line behind him. Do 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 do.
So they do a total rewrite. But the reason they got them is because they did an uncredited rewrite on Grinch.
Mm.
Okay, so unrelated. Around this time, Mike Myers was hired to write Dieter's Day, a film based on his SNL skits, Sprockets. Now, those are like, he's a German film reviewer. And so, and it's like, I love it. Like, just playing into German stereotypes.
Right,
and then like,
right.
Like, Will Ferrell will come on, or Woody Harrelson was the guest. And like, and then just, they just push that. The German stereotype.
Oh, and he does like, the dancing thing. Like, I remember that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's wearing a black turtleneck.
Yeah.
His hair slicked back and he's wearing glasses.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Such a funny bit.
Is it? I watched two of them and I didn't laugh once.
Oh, some of them are funny. Come on, man.
But they were very popular.
Okay. There you
so,
go.
So he's going to write, and his character's name is Dieter. So the idea would be like, what life in a German expressionist kind of nonsense day would be, right? And so he...
Weird concept for a movie, by the
I
way,
know,
but
right.
Continue.
Universal pays him $20 million to make this.
Damn.
To write and star in it. Myers personally calls production designer Bo Welch to do the film, to do the production design.
Mm-hmm.
Now...
Because were they making it all German expressionist?
Yeah,
is it
exactly.
Gonna look like,
it was
going to look like Caligari.
Right? So, exactly. So, at this point,
that's
if
cool.
You don't know who Bo Welch is, his first big movie as a production designer was The Color Purple for Spielberg, and he was nominated for it. Since then, up to this point, he did The Lost Boys, Beetlejuice, Ghostbusters 2, Edward Scissorhands,
yes.
Joe versus the Volcano,
okay.
Batman Returns,
Ugh.
A Little Princess, The Birdcage, Men in Black,
Damn.
Wild Wild West.
Damn. So he's really good at production
really
design.
Fucking
really
good.
Fucking good.
Like,
at
regardless
it.
Of what you think of some of those movies, the production design in those immediately
Incredible.
Jump in your head.
Incredible.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. That's that. That He's like designed a whole generation's aesthetic.
Childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like kind of weird, a little dark, some German expressionism in there, like steampunk.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
Beetlejuice
yeah.
is so good.
So, yeah, he's just like, he formed your childhood.
Yeah.
So he calls, Myers calls Bo Welch and he's like, I would love you to do the sets for this because obviously.
Right.
Like it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Welch says he's like, you know, actually I'd be interested in directing it. Like, I haven't done that before. I would love to take a stab at that. And Myers like, yeah, okay, cool. Time passes a little bit. Myers decides his script isn't any good. And he just backs out. He doesn't want to do the project. He just walks away.
Yeah, okay.
So Universal sues because they've already spent $4 million on pre-production.
Oh, yeah.
Then Imagine Entertainment, which is Ron Howard, Brian Grazer, sues him for $30 million. And this is what they say in their lawsuit. This was not the first time Myers engaged in such conduct. He has followed a pattern and a practice of breaking his promises, betraying the trust of others, and causing serious damage to those with whom he deals through selfish, egomaniacal, and irresponsible conduct.
Jeez.
Wow.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I know I've heard these like difficult to work with.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get, we're going there,
like,
but
I think that just like sums it all up.
Yeah. in a really reductive, mean way. Yes. So they go to the three parties decide to settle. Like, Myers is like, I can't even deal with this.
Right.
So they settle on him starring in The Cat in the Hat, which to them, they're thinking, okay, we did a Dr. Seuss movie and we had a big comedian at the time to do it. Right. So same idea. Mm-hmm. Right. Mike Myers is really popular right now. But his next original character needs to be made with Universal. This actually, spoiler, this actually never happens. the next one, the only other original character he did after that was Love Guru, and that was not with Universal.
Ooh. Was this before or after Austin Powers?
After the first two Austin Powers. So they settle.
My dad loves those movies.
Austin Powers?
Yeah.
Well, they're great.
They're great.
Yeah. Your dad's a smart man.
He is a smart guy, yeah.
So in their joint statement, they say, conflicts over Dieter are long behind us and only served to strengthen the relationship we've enjoyed for more than 10 years.
Sure.
Wow.
After that last statement.
Yeah. We're going to backpedal.
We know we called you a piece of shit via the law.
That's what we call polishing a turd. Like, that's... Yeah.
That's the worst way for someone to call you a piece of shit, using legalese. Like, yeah. Just say it to my face in straight English, okay?
Yeah. The reason they wanted Myers was that there was a production opening that they were trying to fill. And Tim Allen backed out.
If I can't make my werewolf cat movie, I am out.
He backed out because he was on the Santa Claus 2. Which was having some problems because of the writer's strike at the time. Okay, so seeing as Bo Welch was set to direct Dieter's Day, Grazer immediately gave him the job for Cat in the Hat. Now, this is an unconfirmed rumor. I could not find anything that backed it up, but just throwing this in there, because we do know this, the first part of this is true. Rick Baker, who did the original designs for the cat, and so in one of his books, you can actually see what the original design of the cat looks. And it's worse. It's terrifying. Ugh. It's like, mix what you saw in Cat in the Hat with Jim Carrey's Grinch.
Oh, okay.
And it has that very Whovian face with the
yeah, the face, the lines. That the things have. Oh, that's like creepy as shit, but they use it for all the Whos.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Ooh, no, I hate it.
Yeah. So he did the original stuff, but he left before production began. Now, rumoredly, this is because he got fed up with Myers, who would continually skip makeup tests or show up late. So, according to Amy Hill, who plays Miss Kwan, and
Josh Chan's mom.
Josh Chan's mom from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Myers treated everyone on set terribly. He'd hole away in his trailer for hours on end, making everybody wait. He would only talk to Welch or Myers's own assistants. And he micromanaged Welch, and Welch just kind of let him get away with it.
Right. Because he probably didn't have the experience to be like, to pull rank in that way. If this was his first like directorial movie.
But this is a collaborative experience. Who knows? You know,
couldn't he get like Alec Baldwin to like shake him down?
Get Baldwin in there. He can get him to talk to Mike.
This is Amy Hill.
I was going
to
say though, they treated her the worst, riding her like a toboggan down the stairs and shit.
That was
my God.
I was messed up.
When you see your
violently hitting every stair on the way down.
Yeah, brain
Jesus
damage,
Christ.
Poor woman.
Okay, she says, it was just a horrible, nightmarish experience. There was a guy who held his chocolates in a little Tupperware. Whenever he needed chocolate, he'd come running over and give him a chocolate. That's what divas are like, I guess, or people who need therapy.
Wait, she's talking about Mike Myers had a guy specifically to hold chocolate. For
he had a chocolate guy.
Chocolate. And like he'd come running over like, here you go, Mr. Myers.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This is dark. I said milk.
He gave me the one filled with toothpaste.
I don't eat anything less than 70% cacao.
Sorry, sir. They only had 60.
Also, but like, why did he need so much chocolate?
God,
I'm so confused about
knows.
This.
But
he's got sugar high the whole cat. Yeah. The cat's on a sugar high the whole time.
Amy Hill said it was just like, it's like the amount, the waiting part was just awful because she was like, I had my 2-year-old at the time and I felt like I was missing all of the firsts. Of my 2-year-old because I was stuck on set waiting for him to show up.
For him to be
you know that means something too. When her character the whole time is just asleep the whole time. Like, you know if someone whose character is just asleep the whole time is stuck waiting?
Yeah.
You like, know that's bad.
That's wild. I mean, movie making in general is a hurry up and wait situation, but it's really annoying for everybody involved when it's because of like someone with just a huge ego who's doing it to be an asshole.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, don't even get me started on people showing up late.
So, costing a total of $109 million, the film grossed only $133 million worldwide. So, factored in with
marketing,
it may be kind of broke even. Mm. Rotten Tomatoes, 10% with critics, 57% with audiences.
Yeah, with stoned audiences.
I feel like that might track because, like, again, like I said before, like, I know it's a bad movie, but there's just something about it. I'm like, there's something good here.
So, yeah, full disclosure, I knew that this movie, this was not required for us to watch. I just said, like, it'd probably be good if we watched it just for some context for this episode. And I was like, it's going to be terrible, whatever. I decided to take a gummy and watch it high.
It was great. We had the best time. I wasn't even high.
Jay-Ray wasn't even high.
I was just laughing my ass off at him and the movie.
But it was one of those things where it was just like, you're just like, what is happening? What is going on? And then suddenly, like, just a real killer line would just land.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
And you just couldn't help but just, like, enjoy just how fucking insane it was sometimes.
Fucking bonkers it was. And, like, the whole movie was, it makes so much sense that it was Mike Myers because every bit of that movie with the cat, you know, there is a plot to it, but, like, he was just doing skits. Like he was
he
just
absolutely
doing
was.
Skits.
The whole infomercial bit.
Yeah.
Oh my, like
and the Rastafarian.
It was so meta too. Like I was like we were talking about it later and I was like, this is a children's movie where there is a joke where he does like an infomercial style kind of cooking show and then swears, and then it's like a live on air thing where they have to like cut away. And then it cuts to him and he's having a discussion about suing the children for like because he was injured on, like, it was this whole meta spiral. And then he, like, realizes the, quote, audience is back and is like, oh, anyway, back to the movie. And I'm like, what? Who is that joke for? Who is that entire 5-minute series of events for? It's for not children. Right. It's for weirdos like us who find that kind of shit hilarious. Yeah. Like, what is this movie?
I bought a new TV for my home office to be like as my computer monitor. I got to set up with like all my different stuff. And I was watching it in my office and I'm just sitting back and I'm watching it. I'm like, and I'm in the back of my mind, I'm like, Ian made me watch this. but then, yeah, something like that'll happen where I'm just like,
oh, yeah, that was a good line.
And then I'm shocked to myself. I was like, did I just laugh at that?
That's exactly what he said. We were sitting there watching it and we were laughing our ass at something. I don't even remember what it was. And then we pause and he goes, is this movie funny? Like we were both like, I
that's
think
what you
it
texted
is.
Me, yeah.
I know, and I texted you immediately because I'm like, I think it might be. I think it might be funny.
There's just like you just after a while, you just kind of have to like surrender to him.
Yeah.
Just like it's just really weird at the start, and then once he gets into it, and then that initial terrifying like, oh my God, he's terrifying looking. Oh, after you get over that a little bit, then you're
and
just
like...
And
you get like, past the like really shitty musical number then.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's mm-hmm. just like, for some odd reason, the movie just starts clicking. Mm-hmm. And just the... It's still bad. It's not a great movie by any means. But there are just so much fun happening in there. Like even like Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin was having a blast.
Oh, yeah.
And so you really enjoyed that.
But this movie is not a friendly movie for single moms. Like, this is a woman trying to raise two fucking kids on her own. Like, cut her some slack, Humberflub. Yeah. That's the boss's name, if for anyone who's curious. Mr. Humberflub.
The other thing was just like how crazy violent it was, like hidden violence.
Oh, yeah.
Like everything the cat was doing was like, he's like a maniacal killer.
He's a cat. I mean, like, yeah.
Everything he says is almost like threatening to kill.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are two little henchmen like ride an old woman down down the staircase.
But even he's like, constantly threatening murder.
Yeah. The whole live audience thing.
Wait a minute. Did you say anything?
Anything.
Anything.
Yes. Anything.
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 I'll get you. And it'll look like a bloody accident.
He's yelling at himself. Yeah. And then when he has the hoe and he jumps over the fence and he's like, time to die.
Time to die. I laughed so hard. Oh, my God. This movie is bananas.
You dirty hoe.
You dirty hoe. Fucking I saw bananas. That. I'm like, oh, my God. Now parents from 2003 are going to have to explain, whatever the movie came out, are going to have to explain to their kids. Well, like, why was that funny, Mom? Well. It's because it's a dirty house. I can see that, but why is that funny?
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is like not a, like it is and is not a movie for kids because there's yeah. so much veiled, weird, sexual and violent humor in there.
Now that I think about it, the first time we were just like, where is this movie going? Is when he goes, he looks at the mom's picture. He's like, hubba, hubba. Oh, and then he unfolds it.
Yeah, and then
like a Playboy cover. Yeah.
And then after he's like, oh, awkward, he puts it back. And then he tucks it away inside his fur. Did you see that? He keeps it.
It's like
so,
what is this movie?
It's so fucked up.
I remember that. I think that was like the moment was like, holy shit, where is this movie going? And then like the humor throughout.
Well, then he
like,
and the then his hat like, got well, a boner.
Yeah, did you see his hat? I was gonna say his hat. Yeah. Like his hat like goes from limp from dick like, to
from flaccid to
top hat
straight.
Yeah.
There's like a part where he's just like he's hitting on Paris Hilton. Like it's just like
oh yeah,
what
yeah
Paris.
That's the most fucking early 2000s move. Just like, oh, just put Paris Hilton in there for like 5 minutes. Like, way to date your movie.
They come out of the club, Jerry goes, what was that scene?
What was it? The whole thing, it was like all just a mechanism for him to like, quote, lose his hat. But then he never actually lost his hat.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
they probably all recognize like, well, you know, the Cat in the Hat's hat has now become part of rave culture. So we should probably put the Cat in the Hat in rave. While we're there, put Paris Hilton in there.
Yeah, exactly. But all of this, all this stuff that we're talking about, the stuff that's like, this movie is insane. It's like bonkers. The humor is like actually pretty adult. But that's what makes it even watchable. That's all because of Mike Myers.
Yeah, I know.
So so like that's kind of a bummer. That's like he's such a pain in the ass and made this movie so terrible for everybody else. Is because like he's also the only reason this movie even works at all on any level.
I mean, the kids are good. They're doing what they're doing. But that's Alec
true.
Baldwin.
Oh
is
yeah, that's
true.
Okay,
like,
sorry.
Like he was.
It's like
was
Mike Myers, Alec Baldwin, the kids, the production design.
Yeah, and then
those are the tiers.
And then the way the bottom thing one and thing two.
Oh my
those
God.
Terrifying creatures.
Because that was the other thing, too, is we're like, this movie looks amazing. Like, it looks cool, and that's so much work. Like, all the prop design.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were talking about how, like, doing a Dr. Seuss movie would be the most fun movie to do production design on because you have to, you know, they're like, here's
the cupcake
flim-a-ma-jab, the Cupcake-inator 5000. Like, you're going to make the weirdest props.
Well, I thought about that.
So
I thought about that, too, when you pulled out the fun detector or whatever that sucks your cup to their head. I was like, that's a really neat looking prop.
Yeah.
Like it's functioned, like it extended and everything. Like it was very Dr. Seuss.
You should 3D print that.
Oh, okay.
And find out what your kids are at. Yeah. If they're at, what was the
bedwetter?
Bedwetter, rule breaker.
Yeah, but one of them was like maniac. Like,
sociopath.
Yeah, sociopath, serial killer, or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, serial arsonist.
Serial arsonist. That's
what it was. It was serial arsonist.
That's what my youngest would get.
So, yeah.
This, you guys, this movie is bananas. It was, just going to throw that out there.
If you haven't
seen
it, it
was a lot of fun.
If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and watch it. And if you're of age and enjoy cannabis, do that as well.
Or be in a room with someone who is doing
the,
that.
The part... We forgot to talk about the Rastafarian part.
Oh my God.
We were laughing.
I laughed
so fucking hard.
So hard.
It's a canine.
A canine American.
Can you hold my dog?
Yes. Okay, I have a problem with the word dog. I don't use the D word per se because I think it's really, really wrong.
Yeah.
But I will happily hold your canine American.
Yeah.
Could I sign this petition? With this comically oversized pen.
That requires
two hands.
That whole sequence is gold.
Is the funniest thing so I have good. Ever seen.
That was
right. And then you see Val Baldwin signing it. When he with the giant pen. It's so funny. It's so good. Okay.
So just for that scene, do yourself a favor.
That scene, what was the bit where he pretends to be the pinata, gets hit in the balls.
Oh, yeah. And then he like goes and he's like a little girl.
He's like
on
a little
swing.
Girl on a swing.
That was pretty funny.
It's like this weird cutaway. What was the song?
Sunday morning.
Oh, I'm easy like Sunday morning.
Yeah.
It's like.
And a quick cutback.
What is that joke?
Oh,
what?
And then he was getting ready to bean that kid in the head with a giant bat. He was going to
murder
that kid. Yeah. Oh my God, this movie is like.
This movie's fucking awesome.
This movie is wild.
Right, I think you may have turned me on like my opinion of the movie because I was going into it already just being like, oh, he's going to make me watch the Ken the Hat. Jesus Christ. And then after I watched it, I was like, okay, and again, there's something good about it. But you're like turning me into like part of that 50% on Rotten Tomato for audience score.
It's just so weird.
It just eventually just wins you over. And then there are just some lines that are just like, bam, that was a great line.
That was great.
A lot of like stuff that the kids were saying was actually pretty good. Mm. Okay, so Bo Welch never directed a movie again. He did a few episodes of Netflix's series of Unfortunate Events. Again,
also had cool ass production design.
Cool ass production design. And Welch defends the movie. He's like, even though it was so harshly received, he calls it an amazing once in a lifetime experience with the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
He feels so lucky he was the director they chose.
Yeah.
I did it. Yeah. I soused it up. You're welcome.
I soused it up. His quote there where he says he thanks Mike Myers for that, the way it reads is that he could be saying that it was because he's the one that got him onto the film because he's the one that...
Signed him on for Dieters.
Yeah. He wanted him to do it. But it follows after the highest of highs and lowest of lows. So I wonder if it kind of is saying, is like, I think Mike Myers for that, for those highs and those lows.
And those lows. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the intention, but via the interview, that's what it kind of seemed like.
Take it how you will.
He sounds like a cool dude. He sounds like a good guy.
Yeah. He did talk about, he was like the hoe joke in that interview. And they were talking about how like me and Myers thought it was too funny, like, and so we left it in even though we got a lot of backlash for it.
That's funny. Just wants to do what he wants.
Audrey Geisel was appalled by the film, and she never liked the casting of Myers and refused to give Hollywood the rights to adapt any further books into live action. So that's why we've never
seen anything.
But
else.
What about Lorax? Oh, that was fully animated.
Lorax, okay. And then they did the other Grinch with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, yeah.
All of those are terrible.
Yeah.
All of those don't get it. The Lorax was so. You had Danny DeVito as the Lorax. Wow. Perfect.
Perfect.
You got
casting.
It. Okay. Now litter your movie with product placement. You fucking morons.
You guys missed the whole message.
Yeah.
Like, that's the funny thing, too, is that Danny DeVito would have been good in live action as well.
Yeah, oh my God.
As the Lorax.
Hysterical.
They should make that now.
Yes, he could still do it.
Yes, 100%. Pay the troll toll, baby. So that would be, yeah, 100%. That would still work great. And he would be terrifying looking. A humanoid Borax.
Yeah, you suss it up like they did for the Grinch and put Danny DeVito there with a giant ass mustache.
Yep.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, give him the, I'm all
give
for
him
that,
the Frank
actually.
Reynolds glasses that make his eyes look all buggy from Always Sunny.
Yeah.
Maybe you got
just,
a Lorax.
It's just Frank the Lorax Reynolds. Okay.
Oh.
Moving on from the Cat in the Hat. Worth it though, right?
I mean, I would never thought in a million years I would have said yes. I don't know. I guess it was worth it just for me personally from that experience of watching the movie with you that was like so goddamn funny and I laughed so hard my face hurt.
Yeah, Jay,
that alone.
After the Rastafari thing, Jerry just had a pause and Jerry was like,
My face! I couldn't breathe. My face hurts so bad. So for that moment alone, which I know I realize is very personal to me, but I was like, worth it.
I don't know. Like my daughter had seen it. I didn't know that.
Without me.
And I was like, she came into my office. She's like, what are you watching? I'm like, oh, I'm watching The Cat in the Hat for the podcast. And she goes, oh, I've seen this movie. I'm like, when have you seen this movie? And I think she said like one night she was like sick or something like that. Or she saw it like at a friend's house. And I was like, what'd you think? She's like, oh, it's terrible. And then she just walked out of the room.
Everyone's a critic. Did she ask you to explain the dirty hoe joke to her?
No, I don't think she even remembered. It probably just went over her head.
That's the thing, is it's like, this movie is not really for kids. Like, of course kids are going to be
well,
like,
no, and my kids are stupid too. Like, Lisa and I will like make a joke or something, and like the number 69 will come up, and we'll just laugh and high five. And she'll be like, why is that funny? Why'd you high five? I'm like,
we'll tell you when you're older.
It's because a 6 and a 9 are the same if you flip them. Like, just
that,
just
good logic.
Yeah, she's like, oh, okay. She's like, walked away.
God, you guys are so lame.
Yeah. Oh.
They think numbers are cool.
It's
math. Okay. Bruce Willis in 3 movies for Disney. Willis was producing and starring in a film called Broadway Brawler. You guys remember this one?
Mm-mm.
Not even a little bit.
It was a hockey movie. It was kind of like in the vein of like Jerry Maguire kind of thing. It never finished.
I was like,
just spoiler alert, the movie never came out.
That combination of words you just said made no sense.
I know, like
to me.
Broadway Brawler, that just sounds like...
Like you keep trying to explain it and it's just getting more confusing what the fuck you're
Broadway,
talking about.
Broadway Brawler sounds like a movie about a musical theater fan who fights other people for their tickets.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Not a hockey.
I'd watch that movie.
I would too.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. As the filming got going, Willis grew, now again, a person we know that is an absolute terror behind the scenes, Bruce Willis, absolute diva. Willis grew annoyed with the amount of his screen time, even though he's the main character in it. Mm. He was growing annoyed that he wasn't on the screen as much. And then his hairdresser left to do another film. Then he went ballistic.
What hair, Bruce?
I know. So is this before he like went
what
fully
hair
bald?
Do you have that needs dressing? Calm down.
Back then, you remember he had a little, you know,
a wisp
back there.
He had a Homer Simpson wisp.
Yeah.
Maybe because the hairdresser is the one that made him look like he had hair.
He like fluffs the wisp in a way that looks like he's not going bald.
The hint of hair, he's the LaCroix of baldness. No,
maybe she just had a really good wig for him. Like
yeah,
a toupee.
Okay.
The LaCroix of baldness.
20 days into production, he fires the costume designer, the cinematographer, who is William Fraker, who we actually discussed. He directed the 1980s Lone Ranger and then never directed again.
Mm.
Director Lee Grant, and her husband, who was also a producer.
So did
costume
he have
designer,
that
cinematographer,
authority?
Director, and her husband, because he was producing this movie.
Okay.
So he fires all of them.
Jesus.
One day, just cleans house because his hairdresser left. I don't know why that's related.
They turned me bald.
But
everyone must go.
Everyone get out.
Why is the lighting bouncing off my head?
What year around was this? What was this?
This is 9.
The makeup artist didn't have any powder on hand to cover the baldness.
This
See, it's
around
just 97. It all
entire budget just went skyrocketed. What'd you say?
This is 90, around 96, 97.
Okay.
So Willis asks his friend Dennis Dugan, to come over to direct. Now, Dennis Dugan is basically Adam Sandler's director. Like, he did Happy Gilmore, but at this point he did Happy Gilmore and Beverly Hills Ninja. But since then, everything that's come to Netflix with Adam Sandler in it is this guy. The grown-up movies and all that. So, he's a friend of Willis, and he's like, can you come over and take over as director? He shows up for one day before the production company decides to shut the whole thing down. They're you're clearly, like, out of control, Willis.
Yeah.
Right? And they've already spent $17
million on the movie. Oh, wow.
So, Disney, who was distributing it, pays off the production company the $17 million. Just goes, here, you can have that. You've already spent it, so here you can have your money back. And then threatens to sue Willis to get that money back. They're like, listen, we just took care of this problem for you. Jeez. You're going to be in three movies for us.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
And Willis works out a deal to star in three movies produced by Disney, and he would only be paid $3 million rather than his usual $20
million.
The three films.
Per or total?
Per.
Okay.
I know. It's like. Yeah.
I'll kill to have $3 million, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
The three movies are Armageddon in 1998, The Sixth Sense in 1999, and Disney's The Kid in 2000.
Well, two of those didn't turn out too bad for him.
No.
Yeah.
They did not.
So what are you complaining about, Bruce?
Yeah, right. So I've always thought that was very strange because I remember seeing the trailers for Disney's The Kid and being like, why the hell is Bruce Willis the action star in this movie? Yeah. Weirdly enough. So that movie is about him meeting his younger self.
Right.
Younger self played by Spencer Breslin, who was also
the kid in the camera. Yeah, yeah.
Weird connection.
Full circle.
But yeah, those movies, especially Armageddon, made $553 million worldwide. Sixth Sense, $672 million worldwide.
And is like a cult classic.
Yeah,
like a
Sixth
phenomenon.
Sense is like still talked about and parodied to this day.
Yeah. So yeah, not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Right? Willis only had bad things to say about Armageddon and working with Michael Bay. This is Bruce Willis on working with Michael Bay.
Few people will work with him now, and I know I will never work with him again. It was a great crew, but a screaming director does not make for a pleasant set experience. But look, we were all big boys, and we all got through it.
I hate the end of that quote, because it's like,
and
you
girls.
Couldn't get through the Broadway brawler, you little weenie.
Yeah.
Well, they brought his hairdresser back for Armageddon, so,
I'll be in a space helmet the whole time, so you can't see my hair? Okay, I'm in.
Done.
Well, it's the same hairdresser for Steven Tyler, right? Because he did the music for that. I don't know.
Yes.
I just think Steven Tyler's he's got a lot of long hair.
That, I would argue, is one of those examples of like this whole forcing someone to do a movie worked out phenomenally well for Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they got almost over $1 billion off of that deal. So sometimes it works, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, last one, which I think is my favorite. Keanu Reeves in The Watcher from 2000. Reeves plays a serial killer taunting a detective played by James Spader. Directed by Joe Charbonic, who was friends with Reeves and a roadie for Reeves' band, Dogstar.
Charbonic sounds like a Pokemon name.
Totally.
I choose you, Charbonic.
Charbonic, go!
And it's a fire type and metal type.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reeves chose him to carry his stuff for him. So he was trying to make his directorial debut with a low-budget movie about musicians on the road doing something he knows, right? However, the production company that was going to make that were like, okay, this isn't working, but we have this other project that's kind of coming up, and it's The Watcher, but it's a budget of $25 million. So, first-time movie.
Right.
Like, that's a big jump, right?
Well, like, first-time director who came from, like, a roadie background.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess he knows a lot about gear, which maybe you need to know to be a director.
Sound, maybe. Like, so Reeves didn't want to do the movie, but did it as a favor for Charbonic, and Reeves only wanted to be paid on scale, which means he would, via the Actors Guild, he'd be paid just the bare minimum, what any other actor would be paid on that set, regardless, even if they had one line. He just wanted to be paid on scale.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Reeves is famously known for how much he hates being a celebrity, and he hates how much money he gets. Like, he's very generous with his money. Like, he was, like, he hated how much he was being paid for the Matrix sequels, and he, like, divvied that up with, like, the rest of the crew.
Aww.
Like he was just, like, known for that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
Nice guy.
So he didn't want to do the movie, but he kind of did it as a favor. Reeves thought this role was more of a cameo, but because they signed him, they expanded his role to a co-lead. So much to his outrage, he was paid an additional $2 million.
Because his part went up. Yeah.
And because he was Keanu Reeves.
So he kind of
he did The Matrix.
He more or less kind of wanted to have like a Buffalo Bill style cameo. If he's, you know, I'm just related to like a serial killer.
Yeah.
He's not in a lot of the movie, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But okay. But then it's like, oh, Keanu Reeves, The Matrix? Oh,
yeah. And so like, oh, we got to have him more. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Because he's big and upcoming, right?
He's just like, no, that's not what I wanted.
And so now he's making more than James Spader. And this just infuriated him.
Wait, so, Keanu Reeves or James Spader?
Keanu Reeves. Oh, okay. Keanu Reeves. So he was so mad about this, he refused to promote the film. So he didn't did any of the talk shows or anything like that. And they couldn't use his likeness in the posters. So the posters for the movie is just like a silhouette of Keanu Reeves with his long hair.
A guy
hair.
With long hair?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. So you can't tell this.
I have never heard of this movie.
Yeah, because nobody saw it, right? But so a year passes. Keanu Reeves explains why he actually had to do the movie. Ray, you are Keanu Reeves. You're going to be our Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. If it's September, that means it's been a year, so I can finally talk. I never found the script interesting, but a friend of mine forged my signature on the agreement. I couldn't prove he did, and I didn't want to get sued, so I had no other choice but to do the film.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me? That is insane. Does he know what friend?
I'm assuming.
A friend of mine forged my signature.
Or did you just do it when you were like stoned, Keanu? Come on.
Well, first of all, Ray, amazing Keanu Reeves impression, by the way.
It was Jachoknik or whatever. It was his Pokemon. Charbonic.
Charbonic.
Charbonic's like,
no, I thought the same thing, but through that interview, he does clarify that the two differences. So it wasn't him, which would be even funnier if it was him.
I couldn't prove he did it, and I didn't want to get sued.
Like, so, okay. Imagine that scenario. You're just like, hey, you're best buds with Keanu Reeves. You're having like a party, I don't know, and you're at his house, and you see the contract, like, hey, you want to do this movie? This contract is sitting on the table. And does someone just like, oh.
Yeah. Someone's probably
just
like,
trashing the script just now. I'm going to write it on there.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing.
Like, but then he'd also have to send it in.
You know who it was? Dude, bro, you know what would be hilarious? If you did this fucking movie, bro. He had a coked out trailer,
bro. He had a coked out trailer, bro, at his party.
That's,
at his
what,
house
it,
party.
That's what happened.
Wait, it was because he was in his trailer. He was a trailer bro.
Yeah. You could be the next Anthony Hopkins, you know, man? Like, bro, like,
this movie sounds fucking hysterical, bro. Me and Charbovnik, we're going to...
No, I don't want to do it. Well, fuck you. Like, yeah. Signs it.
Keanu leaves to go do some like training for like the Matrix sequels. And his friend's like, Keanu Reeves.
Fuck, bro. Wait, how do you spell Keanu? Is it A-E or E-A?
How do you spell Keanu in cursive?
Yeah.
He just puts a big X. Keanu's like, fuck, that is my signature. How did he know?
They signed it. They signed it. Guy in the Matrix.
The one. He just writes the one.
The one.
Was he Bill or Ted? I'll just do Bill and Ted.
But think about it.
Keanu Reeves, his signature is Bill and Ted.
He doesn't even know. He doesn't even remember.
Yeah, I don't remember which guy I was. Was I Bill or was I Ted?
But think about like whoever the friend that signed that, he would have had to given it to somebody. So even if he forged the signature, like Keanu could have been like, "Oh fuck that," and tore it up. Yeah. Threw it away. Like so not only did he forge it, he had to be like, "Oh," and he takes it to the production company.
I wonder if he was
put
like
it in a manila envelope. He faxed it. He followed through. That's like that is a lot of follow through for that level.
The only thing that I could think of without doing all that this would be part of is if this friend was in like a pitch meeting with Keanu for this movie, and Keanu's like, he's like, "Oh, I don't know if I want to do this. Oh, excuse me, I'm gonna go use the bathroom for a second." And his friend's like, "Check this out, bro."
He's doing it.
Yeah, it's gonna be fucking hilarious.
He made fun of me last night, piece of shit.
He tried to give me $1 million because he didn't want to get paid so much, but I
Here's the thing though. I feel like you could easily prove that that wasn't you by doing a handwriting sample or something. There's got to be some like forensic whatever bullshit you can do. Take fingerprint the contract. I don't know.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if like he actually did sign it himself.
And forgot?
And not necessarily forgot, but then like saw how horrible the movie was. Like, I'm just going to come up with this whole thing.
This elaborate lie.
Because here we are deconstructing. Yeah. It's like, well, how does someone sign it and then send it in for him? Like that's
maybe he thought it was like he was signing something else. And he's really confused. Yeah, he was high.
That's probably the most logical explanation. Because your friend doing it is a joke. Unless this friend comes forward. Friend of Keanu Reeves, we would like to hear from you. Coked out trailer bro who was at Keanu Reeves' house in whatever year this was made.
Yeah.
No, forging signatures.
Like, "Hey, buddy, where are you?" "I'm in fucking Toronto because he's making me do this movie, you piece of shit."
"Thanks, motherfucker."
"You forget, I know kung fu."
Yeah.
Charbonic also sounds like a medication you take for like...
Ask your doctor today about Charbonic.
Well, Joe Charbonic never directed a film again.
Oh, it's because people kept making fun of his name.
Well, and I guess we already talked about Worth It for Cat in the Hat, and it was worth it for Disney to get Bruce Willis to do those movies. But
I mean, it seems like kind of going back through the list... The one that first pops up in my head of like worth it for both parties was Bruce Willis, because those movies were good for his career. Maybe not monetarily, but like whatever, reputationally.
Yeah.
And then those were really good for the studio.
Yeah.
So that was Italian worth it. Job. Italian Jobs. Probably.
Calvin and the Chipmunks. No. Garfield.
No.
Yeah.
Gulliver's
Travels.
Yeah, definitely no. So pretty much Electra. Just Bruce Willis. Yeah. Willis is the only one who came out on top for this.
Yeah, maybe the moral of the story is for studios to ask them if it's worth it to make actors or other people go through with their contracts in such a way. Is it worth it for them? Probably not, because all these movies didn't do well.
Yeah. I just even feel like it's not worth it from a logistical perspective, because if you force someone to do something they don't want to do, they're going to make your life hard, right? Like, they're going to throw little baby tantrums and like make shit harder for you. So it's just like...
Well, let's make that a teaser, because as it happens sometimes, there's one movie that I'll just like go into that I just wanted to discuss, just like we just did all these other movies. But then I went into it and it was this crazy enough story to be its own episode, which is exactly what you're talking about. Forcing someone to do the star, what is that like? What's that process going to be like?
Yeah,
creatively. How's that every day on the set?
Yeah,
and that would be Theodore Rex. So
Theodore,
please join us next time when we discuss that one.
Stay tuned. In the meantime, should we do some follow-ups?
Ray, what do we got?
Okay, so we have some follow-up on the MCU Part 3 podcast episode. Kelly M. wrote on Spotify, "I'm not sure if you've ever been told this, but in the shit show outro, especially when you say the word obviously, you sound so much like Jerry from Rick and Morty." Love the podcast.
That's funny. Obviously.
Obviously. I sent that to him and I was like, this is what a compliment.
That's great.
I would love to be Leo Spichemin.
Leo Spichemin.
That's so funny.
All right. And then we have a lot of new patrons.
Oh my God. For those who might not know, we at the end of the third MCU video, I say that the fourth one is already available, but it was a Patreon exclusive. And so we got a shit ton of people.
Yeah, an influx of new patrons.
New patrons.
Our Discord, like, popped off, man.
Yeah. So I want to say a big thanks to all of those, all you patrons, like these new folks. Like, really, thank you. Even if you just stay for a month, thank you. Like, thank you for supporting the channel.
Check out Cliff's Closet.
It makes it up.
All right. So as part of our new patrons, we have five new meddling executives that we would like to spill some tea about. The first one is James.
You know, I heard about James, and he is the premier fishmonger at Pike's Place Market in Seattle.
Of course. James, like, the fishmonger.
Yeah, even if he doesn't live in Seattle, like, he's just like the main, like, you know, he's the one that trains all the people to throw the fish.
to mong the fish.
Yeah. You know, they say, hey, fish, and they throw it, you know, like, that's
just lines of dudes named James, like, throwing fish back and forth. Yep. Very biblical.
And, he's traveled the world teaching people this.
Yeah, this skill. He's done
the art of monging.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it's important that your whole line, everybody's named James, or this is not going to work.
This will not. No.
Yeah, because as you yell, like, hup, James, hup, James, hup, hup, James, hup. Yeah, like, you just throw it down.
It's because monging is very precise. And so if you don't have brain space to learn a new person's name, right?
Exactly. It's focused we're all on named the James. Fish. They're fish focused.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now we're getting some of those fish. What? Fish?
The carp cash?
Carp cash.
Yeah.
Get some of that carp cash. Thanks, James.
He could at least take the money to the bank and get us, like, old fresher bills.
Salmon scratch?
Yeah, salmon scratch.
Sorry, it just popped in my brain. I had to say it.
I just wish the dollar bills didn't smell as bad as they do.
That's true. It's a fishy business. Yeah. All right. And then we also had Alan S. join us as a meddling executive.
Alan was actually the prop master on Cat and the Hat.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
The best job ever.
Yeah. When they were repoing Alec Baldwin's stuff and they were picking up that TV, I was like, God damn, that TV is cool.
That's slaps.
So cool. Yeah. So all thanks to Alan S. So, yeah.
Fuck,
he's and fun fact, if you email him, he'll come over and redesign your whole house in Seuss style. it's hot right now, super hot. Like, mid-century modern is out, Seuss is in.
Yeah.
Seuss up your house, everybody.
Yeah, very Seussian.
You got a spruce Seuss.
Yeah, and you need to be, like, limbered up before you have a house like that, because you just get thrown around like a rag doll.
Yeah,
it's kind of part of it. It's the experience.
Yeah,
yeah.
His communication style is a little bit, you know, strange. Though he does only speak in rhyme all the time, as you would expect, right?
I'm sorry, are we going to dinner or not?
He's a method production designer who's only speaks in Seuss. So,
do you want this room blue? Why, yes, I do. Like, you have to get in on it.
Yes,
and he's not like the things where he's doing the opposite.
Ooh, but he did make so that's exactly like that, like, fix him a jig or whatever that they like ride around the house to fix all like the cracks. He brings one of those into your house, you know, and like cartoon style, just makes your house a little Seuss home.
Yep, Seussed it up.
So anyway, thanks, Alan, for the sweet renovation, and also for supporting us. Next up, we have Sean J.
Yeah, Sean. I heard about him. He runs in some very particular circles, particularly those of monster hunters.
Damn.
Yeah, like, you know, we talk about, you know, there's vampires. The vampires are real. You know, werewolves. Talk about all that, like. Sean knows.
Werewolf cats?
Yeah.
Werewolf Cat in the Hat serial killers? Yeah.
Does he work for Tim Allen?
Oh, my God.
Tim Allen hired him to do research, and it ended up just being him, like, you know, like, listen, this is very dangerous work. If you want me to research these different types of were animals, I need to learn how to protect myself. So Tim Allen paid for Sean's training to be a monster hunter.
While he's at it, can you get rid of the monsters in my backyard? Yeah.
Does he have a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? Is that what Tim Allen does?
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
He's got a... He's got a whole like group of like specialized monster hunters and like weird people that work for him.
Right.
He obviously has some darkness in his life, so he needed someone to come get rid of those monsters.
If you're wondering why, you know, you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning, it's because of fucking Sean.
Yeah.
It's because of Sean and Tim, the goddamn Toolman Taylor. Okay. You're welcome.
Cleaning up this world.
All right. Well, thanks for keeping us safe, Sean, and thanks for the moolah. I'm gonna fuck up this name. Loki? Lochi? Lachi?
I'm gonna say Loki.
Loki? Okay.
Loki?
But I'm gonna go with, but like they're also a god of mischief, this person. Loki S. A trickster meddling executive. Yeah,
bringing in that Loki loot.
Loki loot.
That's just, no, he's the sumbitch that wrote Keanu's name.
Oh, you sneaky, sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah, I mean, the movie may be a piece of shit, but, you know, like, we got a good, fun story out of it, so thanks, Loki.
This is going to be fucking hilarious.
Like
a year from now.
Yeah. A year from now, when Keanu can talk about this, once his NDA lapses, this is going to be hysterical.
The
slow burn. I'm going for the long con.
Yeah, long con joke. I love it.
Just every time they hang out, just you wait. You keep saying that, but I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Just like tenting his fingers.
Right.
How's Toronto?
Oh, interesting. Why were you in Toronto for so long, Keanu?
It's not like I've been watching you.
What the fuck?
How did you know about that?
You might say that I forged your signature.
Oh, shit. No. Yeah, wait,
you might say that I forged ahead with my plan.
Fucking Loki, man.
God damn, that guy takes way too much cocaine. Thank you, Loki.
Allegedly.
Yes. I mean, all of our meddling executives are just cocaine-addled maniacs, you know?
And we love them for it.
That's why they fund us.
Exactly.
We can't afford legitimate people.
Just, you know what would be great? Hey, you guys, we should just totally support this Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
10 months from now. What is this on my bill? Yeah.
What is this $10 per month charge to shit show?
I've been 3 months sober and I downloaded Rocket Money. What is this?
People, it's part of the 12th step. The 13th step becomes download Rocket Money. When did I get all these subscriptions? All right. Well, thank you, Loki, for being one of our meddling execs. All right. And then our friend Will is back, baby.
Will went from Will last year. This is legit. Was a method director for us.
Okay.
Yes.
And then was supporting us for several months and then dropped out entirely. Came back as a test audience, and then just today, or within the last like 24 hours, upgraded to a meddling executive.
Is that that's above method director?
Uh-huh, that's mm-hmm. the top. So he went from, you know, just having
he was just
a usual like, you know, stable method director, and then he just got blackballed and he was just gone.
<laughs> And
then like he weaseled his way into a test audience
put on a fake mustache.
Yeah.
Walked into a screening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, then, let me tell you about my ideas for this movie. Yeah. And then some producer was like,
ooh, oh, this guy. And then suddenly he became an entire executive.
That's quite the career path.
Hollywood
in a
story.
Short amount
yeah.
of time.
It's this, you know,
yes. Cinderella story. Rag.
Rag.
Riches to rags to even more riches.
Riches to rags to riches. Wow, what an inspiration. That sounds like that's an E! True Hollywood story if I've ever heard one.
Well, that's the whole premise of Schitt's Creek, isn't it?
Riches to rags to riches? Do they end up in riches? I never
watched
the
last season.
I mean, they're
rich in heart.
Oh, banana.
Yeah.
They're rich in friendship.
There you go. Yeah, what truly matters.
And we thank Will for his...
Will is paying us both in actual dollars and also in friendship.
Yes.
Na, na, na.
I love how, like, I didn't know his real name. And I was like, wait, I know who you're talking about. This is his name in our Discord.
Yes. All right, that's it. Thanks, as we mentioned, to all of our new patrons, all of our meddling execs, and
welcome
for
the chaos.
Welcome. And for everybody who also has just been like a long-term patron of ours and been hanging out,
still
chatting with us
you.
In Discord, you guys are the best.
Absolutely.
The cocaine is on its way.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, we had some shipment problems.
You guys.
And if anybody guys are going through it real fast.
And if anybody else wants to be a part of that party, you can go to patreon.com/itwasashitshow and join up.
And you get to watch the MCU Part 4 video early.
Whoop, whoop.
I think we were on cocaine for this episode.
I did take a hit of my vape before I came in.
Thank you so much for listening. It Was a Shit Show is researched and produced by me, Ian Jench. Sound editing and mix by Ray Reynolds. Our theme music is by Ryan K. Hudson. Wardrobe provided by Clint's Closet. If you're enjoying the show, you can support us on Patreon or help spread the word by leaving a review and forcing your friends and family to listen. And if you have a shit show suggestion, find us on social media at It Was a Shit Show, but shit without the I. You can also find all these episodes on our YouTube channel.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.